Morning.
Morning.
So, good morning. That's an interesting expression, isn't it? Good morning. Means, like, I guess, have a good morning. Have you already had a good morning? Have a better morning? All that stuff. So, if I were to ask all of you, which I'm not going to do, to raise your hand if you've had a good morning so far, honestly. Well, some of you are. Some of you would raise your hand, maybe many of you would, because you're also enlightened. But some of you wouldn't if you were being honest. And, of course, in Zen, it's not so much what happens to us that is related to whether we have a good morning. It's what we think about what's happening to us. It's what we think. So last time I quoted Shakespeare, there is nothing good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And Chome in the in 1155 in the 12th century in China, a time of great wars between Buddhists, Confucianists, and Taoists, and within Buddhism itself, great wars. Zen Master Chome said, in the three worlds, everything depends on the mind. If the mind is not at rest, palaces and mansions, horses and cattle, the seven treasures, of what avail are they? So, as I also said last time, my two Zen teachers, my two Japanese Zen teachers, Suzuki Roshi and Katagiri Roshi, were not very much alike each other. They were very different. But they seemed to share one feature, and that is that they could just enjoy being where they were, for the most part. Now, there's an exception. I can think of exceptions in both cases. But I had a teacher in college who said, oh, those are the exceptions that prove the rule. that's what has been passed on to us, to not be caught by our thinking, so that we can enjoy working and playing in this moment, and not even differentiate between the two. That's what's being passed on to us. That's what, in my own clumsy way, I'm kind of passing on to you. More or less, maybe less, but I'm doing my best. So it's about seeing the mold, seeing the pattern of our obsessive thinking. We all have obsessive thinking, and letting it drop away. Through Zazen, Zen meditation, and through fully engaging in our activity, what Dogen calls actional realization. And it doesn't have to be much. It doesn't have to be much, that turn from going over and over something that we're upset about, or projecting it on everyone and everything, to just coming back to what we're engaged in. It doesn't take that much effort, but it does take some effort. So years ago, when I came to this Minnesota, I lived in northern Minnesota, coming here from California. And my first winter in northern Minnesota, about this time of year, I was every morning leaving our little trailer home. I'm not going to get into this part, but leaving our little trailer home and going out to the garage and sitting in meditation. But the snow didn't go away. When I grew up in California, snow was related to being joyful and having fun on ski trips. And then you went home to your warm house, where the grass and the trees and the flowers. But the snow up there wasn't going away. And it's mid-March, and I'm going out and sitting in this little, nice little warm part of the garage that we've, I guess, set up for me to do sitting. I don't know. But I'm looking out, and I'm feeling lonely, anxious, like I've committed myself to sit, just like my teachers did, for a half hour every morning before work. But after about 4 minutes, I think, oh no, I can't do this. And so I struggle with that for a while, and then I find a little phrase in one of my books, because I take a bunch of Zen books up with me to northern Minnesota, and in that book it says, sitting quietly, doing nothing, spring comes and the grass grows by itself. So it's the end of March, 3 feet of snow, and I taped that to my right above my sitting cushion so that I can see it. And it helps me. It helps me just stay with it. Just stay with it and just come back to this. And begin to see the little buds on the trees and on the plants. That they're there already by the end of March in Minnesota. Although often it would take another 3 or 4 weeks for the snow to completely melt. So that's whatever encouragement we give ourselves to do this practice. Is this big word Dogen uses, actional realization. By activity, we realize that we can come back to our original engagement with the world and feel some stillness, feel some equanimity. And of course, it doesn't come that easily or quickly. Often in our sitting, it's just agitation, and then we just sit and watch the agitation dissolve or not dissolve. But sooner or later, it does dissolve. Sooner or later, spring comes and grass grows by itself. And the mind returns to its natural condition of being at rest. So Dogen calls this whole being Buddha nature. Not half a being, but all of our being. Adjusting our heart mind to what is. If it's snow in April, If it's 60 degrees in March, in mid-March, it's 60 degrees in mid-March. Just adjusting ourselves. But adjusting ourselves not in some rigid sort of macho way, by noticing the mind and allowing the mind just to return to its original resiliency and not get caught up on the way things should be or might have been or could have been or would have been. So last week I had lunch with a friend of mine named Linda. And I was friends with Linda and Andy for, long time. 18 years. And Andy helped me a lot as a volunteer with my other nonprofit agency. But then about 6 years ago, Andy got Parkinson's, or maybe 7 years ago. And so I still spent time with them, but I watched Linda's role needing to change so that she actually was beginning to parent her husband, which she did beautifully. But little by little, she had to do that. Had to move from the role of a lifetime partner, equal to parenting him, without demeaning him, And about a year before Andy died, which was probably a year and a half ago now, Linda had me over to lunch at their house, and Andy couldn't speak anymore. But she said, well, he hears you. His receptive language skills are good. So the three of us sat and ate. And Linda was so kind to Andy, but in a way that wasn't at all condescending, wasn't at all like I'm the big mama. Was just gentle with him. And included him in the conversations, and when he didn't understand, she clarified, and then he had a little drool by the side of his mouth, and she, instead of wiping it off, she just pointed it out to him, so that he could wipe it off. She's so respectful. But this is life; things are always changing. Sometimes we'll get a cold Buddha. Sometimes we'll get a hot Buddha. Sometimes we'll get a difficult situation with someone we love. Sometimes it will be wonderful. And this is our life. This is our life. So, and I was just touched by how well, I don't know, how much they still loved each other all the way through and how they still held hands all the way through. Last week I took Linda out to lunch. So Andy's been dead for 6-8 months now. And I got to say a few words at his funeral. About a week or so ago, I took Linda out to lunch with my other friend. And I said, "Well, Linda, you must be exhausted." She said, "Yeah, I'm tired." And I said, but you seem to hang in there. That was really hard." And she said, "Well, there were two things that sustained me, other than the support of all my friends." Of course, she did have a lot of support. She said, "The first thing," she's a Catholic, "the first thing, I did centering prayer every day. I did centering prayer for 15 minutes in the morning and for 15 minutes when I went to bed. I just did it every day, regardless of what was going on. I did it. And I knew when Andy was going to be waking up, so I would just get up early." And she said that really helped. And the other thing she said that helped her was that she took phrases from her own tradition, from the Catholic tradition, phrases which she could repeat over to herself, over and over to herself, which would remind her that she could return to stillness. And then she said, "And finally, I use some Buddha stuff too." And I said, "Oh, what'd you use?" And she said, "Well, remember that book you showed me, the Platform Sutra?" And I thought, "Yeah, I remember that book, but that's a weird..." I didn't say this to her. "That's a pretty weird book." And she said, "Yes, I found two quotes in there, and it helped me when I was having trouble, and I said them to myself often. And the first one is, 'Everything depends on the mind. Everything depends on..." She said that would help me when I would start getting in a real funk, to just say that to myself. But she said, "What helped me more was what this teacher said about the mind when he said, 'Our pure mind is in the depraved one.'" She said, "Every time my mind would be totally depraved, and I would totally feel discouraged, even despairing, I would just remind myself that the pure mind is in the depraved one. The pure mind is in the depraved one." And she said, that helped me the most. So, listening to Linda last week, I just felt that I felt she was really cool. I thought, "Wow, I'm supposed to be the Buddhist teacher here, but look at her! Look at her! Could I do that with my wife, with my spouse? Could I be so devoted and able to use the teachings of our tradition to just come back and I don't know if I could, but I try. That's my actual realization. I try, and that's all we can do, all we can do." And I came home after having lunch with Linda to my own Linda, right? I have a Linda too. Right? Notice the possessiveness there? I came home to my own one. And I said, you know, I told her about it. I said, and she had met Linda and Andy, and I said, "But you know, Linda seemed to have a wonderful joy about her when she was talking to me about Andy and talking to me about her experience with him." And Linda said, "Oh, yeah." She said, "Well, I was just working on your mission, on your little thing you're writing for the annual report, and your mission statement talks about a deep and quiet joy. Is that what you were experiencing?" I said, "Oh, I guess I was." She was my teacher. She taught me in that moment. On that moment, I felt, oh, this is awful for her. I hope this will never happen to me. But then she taught me that what's awful is not necessarily awful if we're just with it. If we're just with it, if we just take care of it, because we're all in this together. We're all in this together. So our mission statement, which Linda pointed out to me, this woman was teaching me, says, to help people experience a deep and quiet joy, a joy that arises whenever we are fully engaged in the work or play of this moment. So that's really all I want to say for today. We have a short talk today because we have our annual meeting coming up, which is sure to be joyful and inspiring and all that stuff. So we're going to have pass the Donna ball and have announcements and then have a short break. And I hope most or all of you will come back for our annual meeting, and then we'll have tea a little later at 11:30. So I'm going to turn things over to Darla now.